Miles, how you doing, man?
Good, what's up?
Not much, just trying to survive another NBA season where I feel like the Lakers are going to get let down again.
Yeah, but, I mean, you just have to wait for them to sign, like, Anthony Davis or something, and then it'll be fine.
You're right. I'm just, these 5 year downswings, I'm just not used to it, you know? I've been spoiled throughout my entire life.
Yeah, I mean, look, Lakers fans, right? I mean, it's really hard to feel sorry for them. So, we missed the playoffs 1 year. Or, we didn't find the top free agent. Like, yeah. No, nobody feels bad for Lakers fans ever.
Except for us. Except for the Lakers fans ourselves. But, dude.
That's right.
I'm sorry to take you away from the Jazz game tonight, which is actually kind of a big, interesting game. Denver and Utah.
Yeah, no problem. I was happy to help on the podcast, and I'm definitely excited about it. But yeah, Denver, I mean, who saw that coming, right? They're one of the top teams in the West. They're playing really well. Jokic is going to be, he's an all-star. They're scoring well. Their defense is way up from last year. But I still like the Jazz chances.
They have really been surging lately, and I can't, well, I don't know. I really liked what Eric Spoelstra said when the Heat were here like a month ago about the Jazz schedule, and I think it's starting to prove to be true that their schedule was just so crazy difficult and there were so many away games that maybe it gave the NBA, including myself, a unfair diagnosis of the team after 2 months. But just like last year, they seem to be rounding into form seemingly at the right time. What would you attribute that to?
Well, I mean, look, the schedule, like you said, obviously plays a huge part. They play the toughest schedule in the NBA by a way. A lot of road games. Kind of the usual things that you've read about a ton of times. I think their schedule has been tough. I think it'll ease up. But I also think there's some other things at play. I think, you know, obviously Donovan Mitchell is carrying a bigger load than he did last year. Last year, he kind of took the NBA by surprise. I don't think anybody expected him to be a legitimate Rookie of the Year candidate. And this year, he's getting game plan, right? I mean, teams are preparing for him, for what he does, and taking away some of the things he does well. I think Ricky Rubio's been a slow starter his entire NBA career.
Right.
And the Jazz really depend on him to get things going. But I also think something that people don't talk about is Quinn Snyder is a really, really good coach. He's incredibly detailed. And he implements new schemes, new defenses every single year. And Jazz players and former Jazz players talk about the intensity of his practice. Right? He expects a lot and he expects a lot of learning. And I think one of the features we'll see with Quinn Snyder is that his teams will always kind of come out of the gate a little slower as they learn, as they implement, as they practice the new things that Quinn is implementing and teaching them. And then they'll start to pick up steam throughout the season as it comes together. I mean, we'll see whether or not that holds true going forward, but it seems like that's been a feature of his coaching tenure, that he's implementing a lot of stuff early. The team, you know, kind of struggles with it, makes adjustments, and once they really pick it up, they start to roll.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, that home schedule, they have a chance to really make some noise. And what are they, seventh right now? I mean, I think they could finish top four if they put on another run like they did last year.
Yeah, if they can get up to the 4-5 matchup, that's great, right? We've seen in the playoffs, it's a different game. Their defense has really improved. They'll probably be the number one defense in the NBA by the All-Star break.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, I like where they're at. Point guard. but then again, it's also brought some questions. Like, is Donovan Mitchell really a point guard? Is that where he needs to be playing in the NBA? I think still probably not. He could stand another playmaker around him, but he's answered the call pretty well.
I don't know if you had a chance to, I hope you have, but a chance to read the Ringer article on Joe Ingles. If not, I recommend it. But it just talks about his playmaking ability and how he may be the most underrated player in the NBA. And I know that he does a lot of the point guard duties with all three of your point guards being hurt, but it's crazy to think that Joe Ingles, one, is turned out to be a good NBA player, but two, he may be like the second most valuable player on this Jazz team behind Rudy Gobert. It's crazy to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's been really underrated and kind of overlooked his entire career. I think that's fueled him in certain situations. It's always funny to see he played super well against the Clippers.
Yeah.
But you can tell the impact that he has. I mean, he gives the Jazz, oddly enough, kind of a swagger and an attitude with just the way he talks trash. Yeah, his playmaking ability is very underrated. And he's shooting like 40% from three.
Yeah.
So he just kind of his all-around game translates really well. I think he's fortunate to be in a system like Utah where he can have a defined role that will ask him to do things that he does well and mask things that he does not as well.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also been really good on defense. He really doesn't get beat that much.
No.
And he guards one of the toughest positions in the NBA, right? It's a wing defender.
Yep.
And we say, people always say, oh, well, he's not going to shut down Paul George. I'm like, well, have you seen anybody shut down Paul George this year?
Right.
Because, you know, or he can't guard LeBron. I'm like, well, no one can. So.
Yeah.
But he does pretty well, and he's obviously a fan favorite, and we love him.
I always hated, this is to deviate off the Jazz for just a second, I always hated when people would say Jimmer couldn't work in the league because he can't guard Russell Westbrook. And I think the point you make is, so it's like, no one's guarding Russell Westbrook. No one's guarding Steph Curry. These guys will do whatever they want against whoever they want. And I think that sometimes such an overrated aspect to the league is like, oh, you got to be great at everything. Well, you know, a lot of these people aren't great at everything. And the coaches like Quinn, who can take the strengths out of guys like Joe, are what separates organizations like Utah from the rest of the league. Because rather than focusing on, well, Joe can't do this, Joe can't do that, like the Clippers did, they're able to highlight what they can do and get the best out of them.
Yeah. It's obviously a great story for the Jazz, but like you said too, I mean, situation and fit in the NBA is incredibly important. And you see guys get drafted who seem like they have all the talent in the world. They go to a situation that's not the best, and they fizzle out, right? They never reach that potential. Whereas you see other people who come into the league, and, you know, I think Steph Curry is a great example of this. He's obviously, like, unquestionably incredibly talented.
Yep.
Right? But if you watch the draft that year, he went, what, like, you know, 8 or 9 in the draft?
Uh-huh.
Around there, I'd have to look it up. But, and that was probably about right. Nobody thought that he would get to where he is now, but some of that is because he landed in such a great situation in Golden State.
Totally.
With this coach like Steve Kerr, who was willing to take advantage of what he brought. You know what I mean? And instead of being an undersized, skinny two guard with two bad ankles, right, they've turned him into just a shooting machine.
Yep.
And someone that can run their offense through and around. And it's just, I don't know, I think he'd have a good career regardless. But I think if Steph Curry doesn't go to the Warriors, he's not the Steph Curry that he is right now.
Totally. That could be, with the exception of the LeBrons, the Kevin Durants, you know, there's a handful of people who, doesn't matter where they go, they're probably NBA greats. But I'd say most players, fit is everything. I mean, we can go on and on and on about players like Victor Oladipo, who unfortunately got injured tonight, but dude played on two teams and didn't look like anything, and then lands in Indiana and becomes an all-star. Fit, it really is everything in the NBA.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, a guy like Jimmer, going back to that original question, I'd love to see him succeed in the NBA, although I'm really happy for what he's doing in China.
Yep.
But again, it was tough, you know? I mean, that Kings team was just a dumpster fire at the time. Hard for anybody to be successful there.
Oh, yeah, and especially when you have the coaches that they had during Jimmer's time are going to go down as some of the worst. I mean, Keith Smart may be the worst NBA coach that's ever existed. Is he even in the league? Like, I haven't heard of Keith Smart in 5 years, and that was the guy he had to deal with. It's fit.
Yeah, that was a tough look for the Kings.
Totally. Do you think Jimmer will make his way back this, maybe even this year, or is his NBA dreams over?
I don't know. I don't think his NBA dreams over, and I think if he got the right opportunity, I think he'd come back. I think he expressed interest in that, right? He considers himself an NBA caliber player.
Yes.
But it's so hard to be able to come in and contribute on a team, you know, halfway through this season.
Right.
And it's really, again, it's about fit.
Yep.
He's a ball dominant small point guard.
Yep.
Right? That's a tough position to play in the NBA right now with the way today's game is going. Obviously, he's got the shooting and some other things, but he needs a little bit of a green light and some freedom as he plays, and I don't know if he'll get that in the NBA.
I know you're not a Warriors fan, and I'm not really either, though I had to root for them over LeBron for family reasons the last 4 years. But I've never understood why Golden State doesn't bring him in. It seems like he'd be able to fit right in at the backup point guard behind Steph. I mean, someone's got to play 10 to 15 minutes a game in that role anyways. He'll never get doubled. Defense isn't a problem because he'll always be playing with Draymond or KD or Klay. It seems like Golden State as the backup point guard is where he needs to be.
Yeah, I mean, I do actually think that'd be a pretty good fit where he doesn't have to do too much. He's got a little bit of freedom. He can carry the offense, do a few things, and still give some of the range and pose some of the threats that Curry does. Now, I don't want to say that Jim was as good as Steph Curry.
Right.
People try to make that argument. I don't think that's true.
Right.
But I think he's got some of the same skills. I mean, he releases a little slower.
Yep.
He's a little bit more of a rhythm shooter than Steph is. But still, you know, you've got the range and some of the other playmaking ability that I think could translate. So, could be a good fit.
I would love to see him. And I'm curious what you think of this, because I'm diehard Lakers fan, so obviously I always want Jimmer to be a Laker, but ever since they got Luke Walton, I feel like he's been trying to mimic that Golden State system, and right now we have just had a rash of injuries, and I think we're the worst three-point shooting team in the league. To me, it seems like that may be another opportunity where backup point guard, shoot threes. I don't know, it seems like there's a handful of teams, Golden State and LA included, where Jimmer would fit maybe more so now than ever with the style of play that the league has.
Yeah, it's definitely opened up so much, and there's a lot more places for him to play. The Lakers could be a good fit. I get the feeling Luke Walton is not in love with his point guards.
Yeah.
You know, he comes from the freewheeling, open system in Golden State and ends up with, Rondo and Lonzo Ball running the point. Two guys that basically, if they can't touch the basket, they're too far away to shoot. So it's, it's really, you have to think, would Jimmer's career have been different had he come into the NBA 5 years later?
Yeah.
Where they're looking for a different skill set, and they're looking for people who can spread the floor and open it up.
Yep.
And they're not looking as much for that one-on-one ISO play, get to the rim and get to the foul line. So, yeah, I think it could have been different. The Lakers could be a really good fit for him. The other thing, too, like playing with LeBron has to be every NBA player's dream to a certain extent, because he makes the game so much easier.
Yep.
I mean, there were guys in Cleveland, Tristan Thompson should just give half his salary to LeBron every year, because that's the only reason he got the contract he did.
To him and five other people from J.R. Smith is another guy who just got ridiculously overpaid because of LeBron. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think with LeBron on the floor, I might be able to score a few points in the NBA. he's that good, and he's that, like, dominant. He's that much of a presence on the floor.
Since we got into the topic of LeBron, only one Laker question, I promise. What do you think is the issue with the Lakers right now? Because in Lakerland, there's a lot of, do we fire Luke Walton chatter? I'm not one of those people. I actually think that the roster is incredibly flawed. But I'm curious, as a Jazz fan, what you make of the Lakers this year.
Well, I mean, I like the Lakers are doing about how I thought they would this year. In fact, when they were, they actually came out of the gate pretty hot, and in December looked pretty good.
Yeah.
And I was getting really nervous because I didn't expect them to be good this year. I expect them to be good next year.
Right.
But I agree with you that the roster is a little bit flawed. And I think LeBron knows that. That's why you're seeing him, you know, take some injuries, take some downtime, things like that.
Yep.
He has been an Iron Man through his NBA career. And, I mean, how to fix it? Obviously, they're always a top free agent destination.
Yep.
Anthony Davis could be really good there. Boogie's looked okay in Golden State. Is he a potential target for the Lakers? Like, there's so much they could do to turn their roster over and reform it this year.
Right.
I mean, they're going to be good. I always have to enjoy it when they're not as good because I
yep.
know that the other shoe is going to drop and, you know, they'll sign somebody.
Yep.
Right. Somebody will be there. Yeah, I'm not a huge Boogie fan for a lot of reasons.
Yep.
But he might make sense there. It just, we'll see. I think Luke is the right kind of coach for this NBA. And I think if LeBron backs him, then he'll stay.
Yep. My thing with Luke is, one, you know, the roster and the injuries make it hard to really evaluate who he is. But I think you hit the nail on the head. In today's day and age, you know, X's and O's is important, but I think you're seeing more and more success from coaches that are able to kind of relate to players. I know that Quinn is maybe a little more old school than some of the other guys, but even then, he has great relationship with Donovan, with Rudy. I mean, they really respect Quinn. You know, I'm with you. I don't necessarily think Luke is the best coach in the league, but I think he is the right coach. He has some good people skills, and that's important when managing people like LeBron and some of the maybe bigger stars that they could potentially get. And then on top of that, I don't love a lot of people that are unemployed. Like Ty Lue doesn't really move the needle for me. Jeff Van Gundy hasn't coached in a decade. It's Tom Thibodeau, no thanks. Like, there's a lot of guys out there.
Yeah, that's the other thing too, right? And this is common across all the sports. It's like, well, we want to get our coach because we want to get a better coach. But guess what? Popovich isn't walking through the door.
Nope.
Phil Jackson's gone.
Yep.
Right? Like, who are you going to get that's better? You have to be realistic. Now, obviously, the Lakers have sway. Magic Johnson in the front office. But who in the NBA are you going to pull from their current job, from their current environment? It's tough to say. I like Walton a lot, and I think, like you said, there's two coaching trees. Not coaching trees, but two kind of schools of thought, right? There's the Popovich, which is the X's and O's and disciplines. Great relationships with players, but a little different.
Yep.
And then there's kind of the Phil Jackson model.
Yep.
You know, the basketball is zen. And I think Luke Walton's a little more Phil Jackson.
Yep.
But I think that works in L.A., and I think it'll work with LeBron.
Totally. And yeah, LeBron likes to go rogue often. You know, there was a big storyline in December where he was getting impatient and started to take over the point guard duties more. And that could cause friction with some guys, but with people like Luke or Steve Kerr or even Brad Stevens, you know, they're a little more lenient with that kind of stuff. And that's important when managing big egos. And yeah, I don't understand the let's fire Luke Walton for various reasons.
Yeah, and I mean, I actually think in Magic Johnson, he's had some other kind of front office positions. I think Luke Walton's probably the best coach he's ever hired.
Yeah.
He's got a pretty spotty track record there.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
You know, I personally would hang on to Luke Walton. I think he's young. I think he's growing into the position. And I think if he goes somewhere else, it comes back to bite you.
Absolutely. All right, last NBA question, back to the Jazz. Do you think... I guess it's a two-parter, and I normally hate asking two-part questions, but I can't help myself. Should the Jazz make a move? And the part two would be, who would they trade, or who would you want to acquire before the deadline?
So this is always tough, right? It's always really tough. I think that the Jazz, kind of if they get into that 4 or 5 spot, and maybe win in the first round of the playoffs with their current roster,
mm-hmm.
I kind of think that's the ceiling.
Yeah.
Like, even though I think Donovan Mitchell has not hit his peak, I think as a team, that's kind of what you're going to be looking at, right?
Yeah.
Make a little noise in the second round, maybe Western Conference Finals.
Right.
But I also think you're maybe that one piece away from being really good.
Uh-huh.
And as far as who's available and who I'd like to see, I mean, look, Memphis making Mike Conley available.
That's interesting.
Is really interesting. You'd have to give up quite a bit to get him. But I think it could be worth it. I think everyone outside the Jazz organization looks at Derek Favors as a big trade piece and says, obviously, he's the first thing to go.
Yep.
But I think inside the organization, I don't have any inside sources or anything, but kind of the feeling that I get is he's very, very beloved on the Jazz team and in the Jazz front office. And they're always going to do what's best for the team, but he has really proven himself here. He's a great locker room guy. He's one that all the players really like. And so even though he's the most obvious, I don't know that he'd get traded. I think, you know, if you can swap out, that's the other thing, is there's not a lot of fat on the roster.
Right.
But you might be able to give up. But they also have been stockpiling picks. So you might be able to combine, like, a Rubio, a Favors, and some picks to get back Conley.
Yep.
But, I mean, he obviously is the dream scenario. There was one other name that I saw today.
Hardaway Jr.?
Oh, Otto Porter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, rumor. I mean, look, Otto Porter's a nice player. We would see how he fits into the Jazz.
He's one of those.
I don't know. I also don't think I think because of Quinn's system, and I think just because of the Utah Jazz organization, they're very conscious of who will do well here.
Yeah.
Like, who can come in and learn the system and play that system.
Yep.
And who can be, you know, who can focus on basketball for the time they're in Salt Lake. And I don't know if Otto Porter fits the bill, but we'll see.
What about anyone from Cleveland? What about Kevin Love? I know you wouldn't get much from him this year, but he's under contract for, I think, 2 more years after this. That's interesting.
Yeah, Kevin Love, I've been kind of salivating over him as a Jazz fan for maybe about the last year and a half now, just because if you look at what the Jazz need, they need a little bit more spacing in the front court.
Yep.
They've made the Favors-Gobert combination work, but it's not ideal. If you could get someone that could stretch the floor and make plays and rebound, which is what Kevin Love could do, that could be huge. The other thing is, Rudy is such a vacuum on defense.
Yep.
I mean, he is just, he covers up so many defensive mistakes on the perimeter. And he's better this year than he was last year. And so you could take a gamble on somebody like Kevin Love and think, oh, he can't play defense. But I think the Jazz scheme and team defense is strong enough that if they could absorb that.
Yeah. That one, and I feel like you might be able to get Kevin Love for next to nothing. I think Cleveland wants to just strip down to the frame and acquire as many picks. I mean, you might be able to get him for Exum, Crowder, and a couple picks.
Yeah. Yeah, and that'd be, I mean, obviously you'd make that trade every day.
Yeah.
Right. And the Jazz and Utah and Cleveland, their front offices have obviously been talking this season and last season.
Yep.
So, you know, seems like there's a good working relationship there. So we'll see. Yeah, I'd love to get Kevin Love. Obviously doesn't do much this year, but I think going forward he'd be great.
Yeah, and I think you guys are at the point, and I even thought that you guys were at this point last year, which is, you know, draft picks, when you're a team that is a perennial playoff team, draft picks don't hold as much value. I mean, you guys basically have your core set in place, and even some of your rotation guys. I mean, I think if you're able to turn some picks and upgrade your current roster, I think that's more valuable than drafting late 20s every year.
Yeah, I absolutely think so. They're at that point now where it's like, you've got this window. You've got Gobert, who's the best defensive big man in the game.
Yep.
You've got Donovan Mitchell, who has the kind of playmaking ability and just shot-making ability that Utah rarely sees on its roster.
Uh-huh.
And so you have to capitalize because you don't know how big that window is.
Yeah.
And you're not sure. I mean, there's no guarantee that Donovan re-signs here.
Yep.
I mean, obviously we love him, and I think he's really happy here now. But who knows what happens, right? You can't bank on anything. You can't bank on big men don't last that long.
Nope.
Right? You got till maybe 30, 31 with Gobert.
Yep.
Another few years. So you've got to gamble a little bit and make some moves. And I think they're deep enough that they could trade away some good players, get some back, and still be good going forward. I don't think they're entirely sacrificing or mortgaging their future to do that.
No, not at all. And sometimes, I think you said it best, like, the future is now for you guys. You got Donovan on a rookie deal. He's obviously going to get extended, but even when he does, that will still be team-friendly compared to a lot of the deals that free agents sign. So it's like you really do have a 3 or 4 year window here where your young guys are getting better. You know, Rudy's probably entering his prime. Donovan is still improving. And then neither of them are a salary cap nightmare. So now you can really take some gambles and try and make some noise, because at some point, you know, Donovan will obviously command the max whenever he's eligible for that. It's not going to be a couple of years, but might as well take advantage now while it's team-friendly and take some risk elsewhere to really see if you can get a championship.
Absolutely. You know what's funny, a little bit ironic, but you know who the player in the NBA who would be perfect in the Jazz system, complement this team so well, and could potentially push it over the top?
Is he a Western Conference player or Eastern Conference player?
He's an Eastern Conference player. As I already said, it's Gordon Hayward.
Oh, yeah. Pre-injury or post?
Yeah, pre-injury. Even post-injury, I think he'll get back. He's got enough of a work ethic and some other things. But gosh, his skill set, the Jazz could just use it. He's bigger than you think he is. He's better on defense than you think he is.
Yeah.
And I think you could run out some lineups with basically Rudy and then four out that would be really good.
Man, I know. That year that Hayward, the year before he left, he was really good. If that guy had never gotten hurt and he had stayed, it's crazy to think what this team could be capable of.
Yeah.
All right, let's shift gears to BYU. I'm surprised we haven't talked about this in the last year. But shifting to BYU football, what are your just overall thoughts of BYU football right now? Are you optimistic or are you pessimistic?
I mean, look, I'm always optimistic. It's the offseason. I always talk myself into my team. But I also try to be realistic about, you know, like what I think their prospects are and what I would consider a good season.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and at what point would I be disappointed?
Yep.
At what point do I think that they've underachieved? Because obviously there's going to be a ceiling with just being independent, the talent level they get. I think the ceiling is good. I think it's a bit of a high ceiling, but there's obviously a ceiling, right?
Yeah.
And so at what point am I going to be disappointed in their performance?
Were you disappointed last season?
The last few, it seemed like such a roller coaster. Right, I think the Utah State loss this last year was one of the worst losses I've ever seen from BYU football, because it's one of the only times I've seen a BYU football team quit.
Yeah.
When Tanner Mangum threw that interception on the screen pass.
Yep.
And look, I've been a huge Tanner Mangum fan. I was like the last person on the Tanner Mangum bus.
Me too.
Right?
Yeah.
Everyone else had gotten off a long time ago. I think a lot of stuff wasn't his fault if you really look at what they asked him to do.
Yep.
Right? Start for a year, then sit on the bench, then come back and learn a new offense, then come back and learn another new offense.
Yep.
Like,
Throw it.
anyway, it's difficult. But as you start thinking, they just quit. Like, the team felt like we can't win with this guy. And once you saw that, you knew it was over for him. And they just rolled over and got just plastered. But then there were some other great moments, right? I like the Arizona game. I like some of the fight that they showed, you know, ending the season. I think it was really up and down. It was enough to make me optimistic for 2019.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up the Tanner Mangum thing. I've had so many Tanner Mangum discussions over the last year. I also feel like I was one of the last people on the bus. The Tanner Mangum, I don't want to say failure because he only played half the year and he played the hardest half of the year. Like, it's hard to really say what would have happened because he played all the hard teams and then once we got to Hawaii, we handed it over to Zach Wilson, and the schedule is just not even comparable in terms of toughness. So it's, who knows? Maybe, I personally believe that we would have won the same number of games with Tanner had he been the quarterback the whole year. But I do like when you say maybe we asked stuff from him that he wasn't capable of. And I don't love the way that our offense looked basically all year. And then I loved the way that we played in the bowl game. And so I just don't know what to expect going forward. If it's more of what we saw in the bowl game where we were more aggressive, there was more intermediate and long throws, then I am going to be optimistic because I think that's the kind of offense that we can have success with. If we're going to try and do what we did the first half of the year, which is the Wisconsin and Stanford, I'm not in love with that.
Well, and I think that's where you see ultimately the reason why they made the quarterback change is because I think Tanner Mangum was maybe a limited, as many things as he could do, he was maybe a little limited in just a few areas. And so the coaches didn't feel like they could really hand him the keys to the offense and ask him to throw down the field. It's almost like when they played with Tanner Mangum, the quarterback, they knew they had to play a perfect game.
Yeah.
They couldn't overcome any mistake. And so any mistake that they made, it was just a huge downer for the team. And the switch ultimately came, I firmly believe the coaches didn't decide to make a switch at quarterback. It was the locker room
Yeah.
that basically said, we can't win with this guy, we can't play with this guy. Oddly enough, you saw it in another Utah State game a few years ago with Jake Heaps,
Yep.
who I will go to my grave saying Jake Heaps had more talent in one hand than Riley Nelson had in his whole body. But for some reason, the team didn't respond to him.
Yep.
And once they made that change in that Utah State game, and you saw how the team responded to Riley Nelson, you said, okay, the team decided this is their quarterback. You can't go back to Jake Heaps now. And I think that's a little bit what happened with Tanner Wilson this year,
Yeah.
was I think the team decided in that Utah State game, like, look, we don't think we can win with this guy. And they had to make a change.
What do you think of Kalani? Do you think that he is the guy?
I do, or at least I'm interested in seeing it play out for a few more years.
Gotcha.
I think if you look at the recruiting numbers, I think he's getting better recruits. I think he's steadily improving that. He's building the depth on the program. He's doing a lot of the right things. Obviously, he's great with the media. But it's also one of those things where it's like, you know, you talked to about it a little bit with Luke Walton, where it's like, okay, well, who are you going to get?
Yeah.
Like, who's the head coach in the wings that's waiting to come in and save the BYU football program? Like, his first few years match Lavelle Edwards' first few years and match Bronco's first few years in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And Kalani, some of the backlash against Kalani, I think, was people were so excited, and I think people have been really unfair to Bronco.
Totally.
Right? Bronco, I think, was a better recruiter than people give him credit for, even
Yes.
though he didn't really recruit that much. And he was obviously a really good coach, as evidenced by the time. I mean, he turned around, what, two defenses, maybe three, just by taking over play calling duties again.
Yep.
All the same players, all the same stuff. The Broncos' biggest problem was that outside of his players, nobody liked him.
Right.
He just was, he was prickly, kind of cactus. And, but boy, he got every single thing out of every single player. Best way to BYU.
Yeah.
And Kalani, I think, is, you know, obviously a lot different, but I'm optimistic that he can get a lot more out of the team. We're asking him to do something he's never done before. Mm-hmm. Never been a head coach.
Yep.
You know, I don't know how you are at your jobs, but I'm a lot better at my job now than I was 3 years ago.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I mean, I'd like to see him. I'd like to see him get a chance, because I also think that he does a lot of really good things for the program. I think just from an exposure perspective, recruiting, all of those things that are important when you're a head coach.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting year. I'm bullish on Kalani. One area that you touched on with Bronco that I think Kalani needs to show improvement on is player development. I just think there has been an unusually large number of players who aren't getting better. And I don't know if that's a reflection of Kalani, if that's the coaching staff. It's, you know, and maybe I'm spoiled from Bronco, but it just seemed like Bronco was really getting a lot out of, you know, players that weren't highly recruited, in a lot of case walk-ons, you know, like a guy that comes to mind, J.D. Falslev. Who knows how that guy was a reliable college receiver, but he was. And, you know, there's guys who produced a couple years ago that we expected to be household names in BYU football, and they never got better. Like Butch Pau got benched. I mean, we felt more comfortable playing Matt Criddle in the Utah game than Butch. And I don't know. I'd like to see improvement there. And then also, and this is where maybe I have been too harsh on Kalani, and you have to do give him time to get better. But I don't know if he has fully navigated the art of what to say and what not to say. There's a lot of times he says stuff that, although might be true, it doesn't exude a lot of confidence in directing the program. Like, one example that comes to mind is saying that we needed to unleash Zach Wilson all season long. Okay, well, why didn't we then? Because you're the coach. Like, if you wanted to let him go, let him loose, why didn't we let him loose? You know? And so those are the kind of things where I'd like to see some improvement there in 2019 from him.
Yeah, there are enough kind of question marks that I'm really interested to see what happens. So I think you see improvements in certain pockets of the team.
Yeah.
I think the whole line's improved every year.
Yeah.
I think actually the secondary is one of the positions that I'm least worried about.
Uh-huh.
To even say that as a BYU fan is crazy. But you know where they're weak? It's weird, where they're weak is at linebacker.
Yep.
Which has never been a problem at BYU.
No.
And, in fact, I think a lot of the reason they didn't get to the quarterback very much this year was it looked like their D-line was always helping in the run game, right? They would keep everything in front of you because it just seemed like they didn't trust their linebackers.
Yeah.
Obviously, Taki was great.
Yep.
Right? But he's got to come on. And then running back, when's the last time BYU had this tough a time finding a running back?
It's been a while.
So it's just, I mean, yeah, we'll see certain positions and we'll see where it goes. The receiver thing has been for a few years now where they just, although you saw it at the end, once Wilson started letting it fly a little more, the receivers looked more open.
Yep, absolutely.
I wonder if Tanner was hanging on to the ball just a split second too long and they got covered back up.
Yep, exactly. So,
And I don't know enough about the X's and O's and the real, you know, mechanics of football to be able to make that kind of evaluation. But they've got some good recruits coming in on wide receiver, too. So I'm interested to see where that goes and if we can develop some talent at that position. Because I think it's there.
I do, too. I mean, I'm not an expert. Like you said, we're not privy to X's and O's, and we don't spend 60 hours a week going over individual players and plays, but when you just compare the type of athlete that we have specifically at the wide receiver position to even 15 years ago, you have to say that we're more talented there now than we were then.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely. And I don't know, maybe I'm in the minority here, but when BYU takes the field, I have not felt like they've been outmatched from a talent perspective in any of their games. Right? I think you'd have to go back to the LSU game where they got really blown out. That was the last time where I thought maybe BYU's not fast enough here.
Yep.
Or BYU's not big enough here, or not physical enough here. The rest of the games, I mean, I'm not seeing a huge talent gap or mismatch. And that's why I'm hoping that, yeah, like you said, some of the development and some of the coaches coming into their own, getting more comfortable with their positions, will pay some dividends. As long as they beat Utah, right?
We've been saying that for so long.
Have a great season.
When is it going to happen? So many times I thought
it's just you can't play this many close games and not win one.
No.
Right? And so that's why I'm like, I think it's got to happen this fall.
There's certainly some things in that game that favor BYU. One of them being Utah overhauled a lot of their coaching staff. I think losing Gary Anderson is going to prove to be a bigger loss than anyone could ever understand. Anything that any player has said about him leaving, it just seemed like he was one of the most beloved guys on staff. And then, obviously, the turnover on the offensive side of things. You never want to change your offensive coordinator when you got a quarterback battle. They don't know who the quarterback is, and now they have a new system. I don't know. There's a lot that I like about this matchup, and we got to take advantage of it.
Yeah, that's what I think. And I think the other thing, too, is you're seeing, like, I think the way the last game went down, I think BYU is going to be mad.
Right.
It's going to be fresh in their minds. Those wounds, they're going to feel them as they walk onto that field, and they're going to play like crazy. And that gets me excited. I think there was some other things too. I mean, gosh, you think, man, it was so close. It was just this or this or this. You know, a couple of plays or injuries played such a huge factor.
Yep.
That it's tough to say again. I mean, it sounds ridiculous to say, you know, Utah beat BYU 9 times. Is it 9 now in a row?
I think it's 8 times 9 years, right?
That's 8 times 9 years.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
I've watched every single one of those games. I've been to half of them.
Yep.
I never felt like BYU was just completely outmatched, outclassed. There was always just one, like, special teams play.
Yep.
Right? Or one. I mean, you look at the way BYU's lost those games. Bounce one off the post.
Yep.
Field goal off the post. Right? Blocked field goal. You have just, I mean, really, the Las Vegas Bowl, even that one, it started so horribly. Probably the biggest play in that game was that fake punt.
Yep. You're right.
You know, just they turn on this bounce of the football either way. You can say every bounce has gone Utah's way. And credit to them, at some point it's no longer just luck, right?
Yep.
It's coaching. It's grit, it's tenacity, it's whatever.
Yep.
But BYU's been right there. It's not like when BYU was, when they beat Utah, like, once 11 times in a row in the 80s.
Yep.
Those games were blowouts.
Right. Yeah.
And I think you'll see, once BYU gets over that hump, I think you'll start to see again a much more even series.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you win one, you lose one, you win one. Maybe you lose two, then you win another one, then you win two. Or it'll go back and forth like that a lot more. But yeah, who knows? It's just been such a strange stretch of games.
I really hope that Zach Wilson is the dude to break the streak too. Just, I think it would be such a fun storyline to have a kid that basically would have went to Utah. Except for they didn't even give him the time of day. And to have him break the streak would be an all-time story. And hopefully, I mean, we still have 3 more years of him. Maybe he gets 2 of the next 3. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Well, you can tell that he wants that game.
Yep.
And you can tell that he's not afraid to show that he wants that game.
Yep.
And I think that's huge. And I actually think this last game, like, injuries play a factor and some other things, but I think the other thing they did was once he threw that interception,
they dialed it back.
That pick on the out route for the 10 for the touchdown.
Yep.
They didn't learn to throw again.
No.
They bottled him up. And they started playing to not lose.
Yep.
Instead of stepping on the gas, stepping on the throat, you know. They need to be a little more. I don't know how many times we have to see a coach start going really conservative to not lose the game and end up losing.
Yep. We need to
and
see.
Then, yeah.
We got
to
see the
you
bowl
also
game.
You need to get a punter who can punt it longer than 15 yards in a key moment of the game.
That was unbelievable. Red Almond, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but man, that was an up and down career with that dude. Terrible at field goal kicking. At times, he would have these 60-yard bombs with 5-second hang time, and then just when you need him to deliver, couldn't do it.
Got two off the side of his foot. I mean, that's tough. And Utah made enough mistakes in that game to give it away.
In most of the games, they've made enough
they
mistakes to give them away.
Right? Like, when's the last time you've seen Utah make a special teams error?
Yeah, not often. They had, yeah, what was it? There was like a 10-yard punt. And I don't, did we even get points off of that? I don't even remember scoring off of that.
I don't remember. I haven't rewatched it. I've kind of blocked a lot of it out of my memory, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, they'll get one eventually. No one's good forever and no one's bad forever.
Yeah.
Right? And so you just got to enjoy it when you're winning and, you know, try to keep perspective when you're not.
All right, let's wrap it up with this. This has been a great conversation, but early predictions for BYU football next year. Just you thinking 10-win season? What's your early thoughts, fresh off the bowl game?
I mean, I'm probably a little higher than most. I don't think they go undefeated, obviously.
Yep.
But I think ceilings. I think 9 wins are in play.
Yeah.
Maybe get to 10, depending on how some things break.
Yep.
But I really think that's realistic for this team. I think the floor is probably 7. But I'm always a little optimistic. I really like Wilson. I like some of the guys they signed. I like some of the return missionaries coming back.
Yep.
I think they'll put a more, quote-unquote, talented team on the field this year than they have in a while. And I think it'll translate out. And I think you'll see 9 wins.
Oh, man. I would love to see that because it's been – the last couple of years have been tough, you know. We don't
– Yeah. They get some big games at home this year, too.
Yes, but
which they played all their big games on the road for like 5 years.
We haven't been good at home in 2 years. That's some of my concern. I mean, we can't even take care of business against Northern Illinois.
Yeah, that was a tough look for BYU, no doubt. But I also think that, I don't know, after the bowl game, and to be honest, after the Utah loss and after the bowl game, the fan base feels more positive and more energized than it has in a couple of years.
Yeah, that's true. We did end on a high note. So I'm hopefully getting those extra practices. Spring ball will be critical. Man, a win versus Utah to start the year next year would be kind of take the monkey off the back and propel you through the month of September would be big.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm not super worried about Tennessee. Washington, I think, is going to be a really tough game.
Yep.
But again, I think they have the talent to be in every game.
I agree.
They're not going to win them all, but they're going to have a chance. And with a couple of breaks, you could have a really good season.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Miles, thank you so much for stopping by. That was a great conversation. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. Anytime you need somebody, reach out. Give me a call. I'm always happy to jump on.
Sounds great. Have a good one, Miles. Appreciate it.
You too, Matt. Thanks. Bye.
Yep. See ya. Thanks for listening to the latest episode of the Matt Biamonte podcast.
Feel free to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. That includes Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and of course, the Anchor app, which is a great platform for listening to podcasts. Something I highly encourage if you are an Anchor podcast listener. I love feedback from you, the listeners. And so you can drop messages through the Anchor app. And of course, you can always reach out to me on Twitter. The more interaction, the better. So thank you to all of you that listen. And I'm looking forward to many more exciting podcasts.